Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Delta Flyers. We are a weekly podcast that discusses episodes of Star Trek Voyager in chronological order. Your two hosts along this podcast journey are myself, Garrett Wong, a.k.a. Ensign Harry Kim, and Robert Duncan McNeil, who portrayed Lieutenant Tom Paris. If you're interested in either an extended version of this podcast or the extended video version of this podcast, both of which included added fun bonus segments, check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/TheDeltaFlyers and sign up to become a patron. Robbie, hello.
Hello, sir. That was like you were singing the intro this time.
I sang the intro.
Yes, you did. But we got to get right to the exciting part.
Let's get to the exciting part.
We got a special guest.
The commander.
Hey, the commander.
There he is. The commander. Welcome, Robert.
Beltran.
Robert Beltran.
Thank you, Casey Kasem.
America's Top 40 with Casey Kasem. Yes. Yeah. Thank you so much for being
here. No, thank you guys for inviting me. It's a special occasion that this episode is very special.
Yes. And before we get into anything, any other discussion, I just want to say that the three of us would like to dedicate this specific podcast episode to Mr. Aaron Eisenberg, who unfortunately passed away last year in 2019. And we were all very good friends with him and really admired his talent and his generosity and his love of life and his spirit, which was absolutely contagious, his enthusiasm for life and for acting. Sure. So we want to thank him for all the contributions that he's made towards Star Trek.
Yeah, Robert's here because this episode was Aaron's, you know, guest star performance on Voyager. And he did such a phenomenal job. And Robert and Aaron together created such a great episode that it's a real honor to have Robert here to kind of share his memories of Aaron.
It was a lot of fun working with him because everyone knows him, he was infectious. His positivity, his love of life was just infectious. And, you know, as far as our relationship of these two characters, if this was a comedy, I would have been the straight man feeding him the lines, right? Because he was like, it was just a very nice ease that we had with each other right off, and I think it really helped this episode a lot.
Boy, I can't wait to hear your thoughts as you rewatch it with us, and we also want to hear your thoughts about what you're working on. I know you've got a short film, and we really want to hear about that too. I just saw it today. And just watched it. It's called Butterflies, and it is on Amazon. You can rent it. You can buy it.
Just for a few ducats. It's not that expensive.
A couple of ducats, but it's a beautiful little short film, which I love the art form of short films. I want to hear about how you got involved and your experience.
You did yours.
It. Yeah.
It was great.
Thank you. Yeah, I did two short films during Star Trek Voyager. The first one was called The Battery. And it was about these brothers playing baseball and kind of coming of age in their dysfunctional family. And then I did one called 9mm of Love about Cupid as a hitman, kind of a funny action comedy. But I love the short film format. Tell us about it.
I met the writer-director, Ken Brisbois, interestingly enough, at a playground for my daughter. I took her to play at the playground, and we were in the sandbox, and then all of a sudden she goes, Lane! And there was this girl from her school, and she ran over and they started playing, and then Ken came over as, you know, so I met him as Lane's father.
Right.
And we were talking, and very, very nice guy. I don't know if he mentioned then or not, but later in our subsequent meetings, we talked about films, and I found out that he was a Northwestern graduate.
Uh-huh. Great school, great program.
Jerry's old alma mater, mm-hmm. right?
That's right, yeah. Jerry Ryan. Mm-hmm.
And that he, you know, had some projects, and he'd already directed a project and was getting ready to do more. He was flying out to Texas quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So anyway, he, over the course of our growing relationship and our families becoming friends, he sent me the script of Butterflies, and I read it, and I loved it.
Yeah,
I loved it, and so we planned to make it just as a plan, right?
Yeah.
But it finally came to fruition. He got the money, and we shot it in Austin, Texas.
I saw that in the credits that had been shot down there.
Yeah, and we found this wonderful actress, Palmer, and we had like two or three rehearsals.
Yeah.
No, I think maybe four or five, but only two with Ken because he had to go back and forth to Texas. So Palmer and I would get together and rehearse. And then we shot it one night.
Wow.
In Texas, in Austin. Really good crew. It's a great place to shoot.
And, yeah, I hear it's a great town. It's a very creative town. Lots of, known for its music scene. But yeah. Just generally a super creative town. Robert Rodriguez's studio's down there.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of fun.
So, we shot it all in one night and went into post-production and all that stuff. And then he got it into Amazon. I think it's going to go to a few film festivals coming up.
Great.
So, yeah, I mean.
What was the set actually? Was that a hotel room or somebody's house and it turned into a hotel?
It was a B&B apartment.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Gotcha.
That they converted. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it was beautifully, I'll say it was beautifully shot, very stylish and, really cinematic lighting. And I thought he really did a great job of, as a director, of sort of conveying all of this complexity, all this, just in the behavior, the shots of the hands and the tension. And I thought it was really, all the detail that was in there, it didn't feel like you were stuck in a room for a long time. There was great blocking and movement and most of all, I thought just really compelling your character and kind of the mystery of what was really going on for him.
Yeah. Thank you. It's a segment of a larger story. We want to continue doing 10 to 15 minute segments until the whole story is done. And we're kind of finding it the most convenient way of doing things with, as you raise money.
Yeah.
Do another segment. The people that have seen it on Amazon have really liked it. It's gotten really very nice, very kind reviews from a lot of viewers. So I think people will be anxious to see the next segment.
Yeah. Well, that sounds really exciting because it was very compelling, for me watching it to wonder about your character, kind of what the relationship with his wife was, what the backstory there was, even though some of those questions are sort of answered, at least on an emotional level in the story. You don't get the concrete answers for some of that, of like what's really going on. So it would be interesting to see some more segments.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm anxious to delve into it myself because I found the character to be really complex and fun to delve into.
Well, it's great to see you back in front of the camera, working, seeing something current that you're doing. And I would just recommend to everybody out there that's a Voyager fan, or even if you're not a Voyager fan, a very different character, very different kind of performance from Robert, but very compelling for sure. Very suspenseful.
Thank you. I'd just like to add out there, if you're searching for this, if you're on Amazon, you type in butterflies, it pops up some old series back in 2007. So you need to type in butterflies short film, I think. Is that right?
That's what, Robbie? I did. Yeah.
Yeah. Butterflies short, plural, short film in the search bar and it'll pop up the image. I think the thumbnail image is of Robert, Beltran. Is that, you see Chakotay is who you see. So
it's available right now in the UK and United States. It'll be coming to Germany very soon and various other countries, soon.
That's great. It's also exciting to hear kind of, how you and your friend, your filmmaker friend, were able to sort of create some content on your own. It's exciting. And it reminds me, I've said this before, maybe on our podcast, but I've said it at conventions. I've always had this idea of doing a similar kind of segmented story with our cast from Voyager doing a Captain Proton only miniseries, like serialized, little, you know, 8 or 10 minute chunks that add up to, you know, do a dozen of them and we've got an hour and a half movie, but you only can see it in little 8 or 10, and we shoot it black and white and it's only in the holodeck Captain Proton. It could be a fun, and do it with the same sort of tongue in cheek kind of fun that holodeck program had. But
I think it's a great idea.
I've always wanted to do that. I would love to, I love seeing what you're doing. That's exciting to see a similar approach on that project you're doing. So maybe we'll get something going someday.
Robbie, speaking of the Captain Proton storyline, I don't think Chakotay showed up in that. Am I right? Like there's some characters that never, yes, you did?
I did once.
Oh, you did? Once. Okay.
Maybe even twice, but briefly.
Okay.
Well, no, there was one. What's the episode where we go back, where I take Kate back in time and show her how we got to where we were?
Oh, God, Robert. You know, that's why we're doing this podcast, so I can remember, because I don't remember anything.
I think it was Shattered, this episode called Shattered.
Okay.
Where the timeline got all mixed up. And it was a one timeline on deck 11 and a different timeline on deck 9 and blah, blah, blah.
Oh,
so,
okay.
I had to take her around, and we ended up on the holodeck in that holodeck program. The Captain Proton, and so I was in that one. I think there was one more where I might have shown up briefly.
I feel like I remember an image of you in a costume for Captain Proton. I can picture you, but I just don't remember.
No, story. I was just in. I was just.
You were in Starfleet.
Star Trek. Yes, Starfleet outfit.
That's what I'm saying, Robbie. In terms of people dressed up in character for Captain Proton, it was just Bob Picardo. Jerry Ryan was briefly in there because she was, you know, trying to tinker with something, and then she left, you know.
Yeah.
And then I remember Kate, clearly, as Arachnia, Queen of the Spider People. But I don't think Chakotay really had – Chakotay wasn't in wardrobe
Tuvok
for that.
Tuvok
was not. B'Elanna was not. So
we're going to create some new characters for our serialized version, and we're going to have fun with it.
I just want to talk about butterflies for a second. I mean, at the end, it almost – that ending shot, it almost felt like that entire scene was almost like a dream sequence to me. Yeah. It was almost like, wait a minute, did that even happen? I mean, what's happening right now? So there are questions that are left that are not answered that I would be interested in knowing if they do film subsequent episodes of.
Yeah, it's deliberately ambiguous and provoking in that way. You know, so.
Yeah. When the actress punches you, was she punching you in the gut or the groin? I'm just curious. Where was that? She does that little push and they shove you
away. She gave me a good one too, man.
Was it your midsection?
We hadn't rehearsed quite that,
enthusiastically.
Roughly, yes. I had to hold it in. I'm almost like cut. But
what part of you got hit when we were targeted?
Just below the belly button. So I was like,
oh, that's a good area.
Oh yeah, sensitive.
Right, just below the belly button and right above your manhood. That's where she gave you the touch.
There's action, there's feelings, there's tears and laughs, everything you could ever want in butterflies. On
I don't know if laughter, you can put laughter in that too?
I don't know if laughter's in there. There's not a lot of jokes.
It's definitely very dramatic, I would say.
Well, you know, that was a deliberate thing that I wanted to do, was not laugh, because he's just at the end of his rope, right? There's nothing funny. There's no humor. He sees nothing except this darkness, angst, terrible angst that he's in. And and there is one kind of bitter grimace smile that he makes, but it's not really a smile. I didn't feel like it was right to have a genuine smile.
Right. I hear you. Okay.
Wow. Very cool. Great. Well, I enjoyed it. I would highly recommend everybody check it out. Butterflies on Amazon. Check it out. It's very interesting, and I look forward to more. That's exciting to hear. So,
thank you.
All right. This week's episode.
Yes. This week's episode is Initiations. So for all of you who are listening to the podcast, please stay tuned while Robert and Robbie, the two Roberts and I, will go and watch Initiations, and we're going to come back and have our discussion and hear about Robert's memories of filming this particular episode. For the rest of you who are our wonderful Patreon patrons. Stay tuned for your bonus segment, which is What Do We Remember? Which will include also Robert Beltran's thoughts about what he remembers from this particular
episode. Can't wait for this.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Hold on. We'll be right back. All right, Patreon patrons, here we are with What Do We Remember? And we're going to start off with our guest this time, Mr. Robert Beltran. What do you remember about this episode? Yeah.
Well, let me have a little bit of this old vodka here now.
You know what comes immediately to mind is Aaron was singing this song. Constantly said, God, I love this song. It's a new one by blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay. But it was all the whole time, you know, day after day after day.
Same finally, song.
Finally, he asked me, he says, hey, what do you think of that that song? Is it one of your favorites too? And I said, Aaron, after we finish this episode, I hope I never see hear that little snippet of the song that you've been singing. I don't even care about it. I don't want to hear it.
What was the song? Like, can you remember?
Can you remember the song? Remember please? The song? You give me the refrain. God, what is the chorus?
I can't remember it. I can't remember it, but it kind of reminded me of this this song by the Doobie Brothers called Winkin' Blinkin' and Nod. That's what it was. Uh-huh. Kind of reminded me of that, but not as good of a song, and by a group that I had no idea who it was.
Right, right.
But he was turned on by this song and this group. You know how he gets when he's excited. He's like, man, this is the greatest thing. This song. You know,
That sounds kind of like me. Doesn't that sound kind of like me a little bit? The way you're describing him, how he gets about that.
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
I get kind of excited about things too.
Yeah.
Yes, you do. I could picture either one of you doing that. If Robert had told that story about you, I would be like, yeah, of course.
Well, at this
Garrett
time,
was obsessed.
In the mid '90s, I was getting into. I mean, I was listening to hip hop, but I was also getting into electronica a lot. And
yes,
I remember when we were on location, I think it was filming Basics part 1 and 2 when we were in Victorville maybe. And we had those, remember how we didn't get single trailers, guys? We got the double one that you shared half of the trailer with another actor, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there would be a partition, obviously. You had your own privacy, but there was another actor in the same, you know, trailer. I shared it with Tim Russ, and I pumped, it was like probably 7 or 8 in the morning, and I put in this cassette tape, and it wasn't regular techno, it was hardcore techno. So the beats per minute were probably like 300 BPM. It was like, da-da-da-da-da-da. It was really hardcore. And I was blasting it, and I get this knock on the door, and I open it up, it's Tim Russ. And he's like, turn it down. Now. And I was like, okay, you don't like this music? No. It doesn't like invigorate you and get you ready for the day. It's really great. And he's like, no, turn it down now. And I was like, oh God, turn it down. Other than that, that's your main thought right there?
Well, I have a lot of images that are coming to mind, like Patrick Kilpatrick. And I'm trying to remember who directed that. Was that Alex Singer or?
I don't remember.
We'll find out.
We'll find out.
Yes. I'm excited to find out. I'm excited for this whole thing, but I got to be honest. I don't remember anything about this episode. I do remember Aaron guest starring on our show. I do have a memory of that, but probably because I sort of put it together years later that he had been on our show. I don't remember the making of this episode. Robert, do you remember we were filming the first season? And we made 20 episodes or 22, whatever the number was, but they only aired 16 episodes for the first season, being the second episode of season 2. You actually filmed this in season 1 when we were filming season 1. It just became an episode that was aired in season 2. Do you remember that? I can't.
No, but it was something that I brought up at the time. How our first season was, I thought, was truncated.
Yes, it was.
My memory is that that first season, we were supposed to film 22 or 24 episodes was the original plan. And when we got to about episode 17 or 18 or something, they said, you know what, we're not going to go 22. We're going to stop at 20. And then later on, we found out not only did they cut it short, but they weren't even going to air all the episodes. that they were going to save some for season two, which meant that, and I've mentioned this to Garrett, that our season one salaries were based on season one, and then season two, we all get a little raise, and season three, you get a little raise. That's all part of the contract. So they got a few of those episodes for season two at the season one rates, because they filmed about four additional episodes that in season one that they aired in season two. So,
you know what, guys? I think we should go ahead and get together, all of us, and go to Paramount and say, you owe us the extra 10% for these episodes that were definitely aired during season two. That's what I was going to say.
They might have paid us. By the way, I don't even know for a fact. They may have said, oh, we're going to give you a little something because we use these in season two. I don't know.
It's my impression, but I guess I'm wrong, but I thought it was the first one that we shot that season.
See, the other thing I'm going to say, Robbie, is this, that the order was also changed. Like, when you look at the order on Netflix, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is the second episode of season two. But in reality, a lot of times there was some shuffling of when they aired certain episodes in within that season. Does that make sense to you guys?
We may have shot them in one order, but then they moved them around. Interesting.
They moved it around, exactly. So I do remember that for sure. And then if you're looking at the quick synopsis on Netflix, it just says initiations is Chakotay is captured by a young Kazon who is undergoing a manhood ritual. So what do I remember from this episode? I'm gonna be Robbie McNeil in this one. I don't remember much because I think that this is one of the episodes, one of the very few episodes that when it did air on UPN that I did not watch. Like, I literally every Monday night, and then they switched to Wednesday, and then we moved around a bit in terms of when they aired our episode. And I watched them all. I firsthand, as a sci-fi fan, I sat down and watched everything, except probably this episode, maybe one or two other ones.
Wow.
I may have been very busy in Vegas listening to electronica music, at this time.
Probably.
So that's probably what happened to me. But I honestly do not recall watching this episode at all. So I'm very excited to see this.
It could be because the B story was very thin and very, there wasn't much to the B story.
Okay.
It was occasionally shooting from away from Aaron and I to you guys on the bridge going, where is he? I don't know. Have you seen him yet? Oh, we got to find him. Okay. And then cut back to us, right?
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Okay. So it's going to be
literally.
So you're going to see Paris and Kim on the bridge going, where's Chakotay? Do you know? I don't know. Does anyone know?
So basically you're saying that's my regular scenes that I always do on the bridge. Yeah. I don't know. Can we fly through there, Captain? I don't know.
the B story was usually pretty strong. There was a lot of stuff happening in the B, but this one was pretty thin. It's really just about, where is he? I don't know. Is he lost? He could be. Let's go find him. Well, we can't. It was just one of those things.
Okay, guys, let's go watch this.
Let's do it.
All right, guys, we are back from watching Initiations. How was it, everybody?
It was great. It was a great episode, Robert. It really was like you described your memories, with you and Aaron, really a two-character play there the whole time. It was really wonderful. Great performances. And Aaron Eisenberg passed away last
September of 2019.
Yeah, and very young. And still, I had seen him not long before he passed away and was just shocked at that news. And so I'm really glad you could be here, Robert, to share some of your memories working with Aaron and just express how much we all as a Star Trek family really miss him.
Yeah, yeah. He was always a great spirit, when you were around him. He was always positive, funny, just a fun person to be around, and that's the way he was on the set. How old do you think he was on that episode? Was he?
I'd say early 20s, probably.
Early 20s.
He's exactly 1 month younger than me. So I was born in 68, December of 68. Aaron Eisenberg was, I think, in January of 69. So very close in age.
Well, what impressed me about his performance was that he was able to bring off that 13-year-old Kazon warrior, right?
Mm-hmm.
He pulled it off beautifully. He has a same kind of energy that Mickey Rooney has, you know.
Yeah.
Mickey Rooney's such a dynamic performer. And Aaron brought that kind of energy to that role.
Yeah.
It was very well conceived and very well performed. I think it showed what he was capable of doing. He had a wide range available to him, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it's interesting because of the debilitating disease that he was born with. It really stunted his growth. It's interesting, the people that have that disease, once they get a transplant of the organ that they need, some of them grow to full size, full adult mm-hmm. size, and some don't. So he was relegated to playing younger roles, even though even into his 30s and 40s, he would still play younger roles. But then, you know, when Father Time catches up with the wrinkles of your face, then you can't play a wrinkly 12-year-old anymore. So that became kind of the end of his acting career once he hit his 40s, I think. You know, it was very difficult for him to find anything work-wise. But just to give a shout out to Aaron and I, I approached Aaron to do Alpha Quadrant, which Robbie and Robert appeared on Alpha Quadrant. We interviewed you guys, and that was the initial video podcast, which was started by Evil Dick Donato and myself. And we worked on that for about a year. Then we just, some politics got involved and it ended up breaking up. And then Aaron went on to do The Seventh Rule with Siroc Lofton. He grabbed him as his co-host. And I did nothing for a while until the pandemic hit this year. And that's when I decided that I wanted to continue with my original idea, which was a Voyager recap. But when Aaron and I were co-hosting Alpha Quadrant, there was definitely a really good camaraderie between the two of us. Our energy really was in sync and we kind of played off each other really well. So it is definitely a tragedy that we lost Mr. Aaron Eisenberg. He was such a wonderful ambassador to Star Trek.
Yeah.
Every convention he's at, I mean, he really gave the time and his effort, and he had a lot of love and concern for all the fans, and he took his time. It was like, if you went up to his table to get an autograph, it was never the, okay, here's later, next. It was never that with him. It was always, I'm going to take the time. I'm going to focus in on you. You're the only person that matters right now, each person. So in that regard, he's very much like George Takei, and also similar to how I deal with fans. And I think also with you guys too, you guys take the time to really talk.
Well, Aaron had a real special way of just connecting with everybody.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't matter if they were celebrities or famous or, you know, wealthy or poor or, you know, it didn't matter mm-hmm. who you were. He just had a way of, he had an enthusiasm and in a way it was like he had gratitude. He was very grateful for mm-hmm. the life he had. And maybe that's because he faced mortality at such a young age. Maybe he was just grateful to still be alive. And so there was a sense of like, he just a great life. You could feel it in his performance. I could see how much he loved acting in that episode we watched.
Yeah.
He just loved having an opportunity to be an actor.
Yeah.
You could feel it in the performance. You could feel it. So.
And I mean, you're right about that gratitude that he had. That was the undercurrent of everything that he did, really. He had that gratitude because he was always beating the odds. The odds were always stacked against him, whether it was dealing with his health or, getting to the level that he got to as an actor. It's already difficult enough to find success as an actor when you don't have any physical disabilities, right? Yeah. And then when you're dealing with what he dealt with, oh my gosh, it's 10 times, 100 times, 1,000 times more difficult. And he really conquered that. So that gratitude is so obvious and refreshing.
There's an interview with him that I saw. They were talking to all of the Deep Space Nine actors, and when it was his interview, he was talking. He said exactly that. He said I felt so grateful every time I came on the set.
Yeah.
He said I'm actually doing what I had always dreamed about doing.
Yeah.
That he felt so grateful that his dreams came true.
Thanks for coming in and sharing about Aaron. We really wanted you to be a part of this episode in tribute to Aaron.
Yeah, yeah.
This episode is about Chakotay and a young Kazon boy realizing that they have a lot in common in terms of how they are connected and initiated in their own cultures. That's I'm gonna leave it at that.
I like that.
Okay, that's
a
very
nice. It's a short but sweet.
It's not a poem. It's not a poem like you do sometimes, Garrett. You sometimes haiku. You do a little haiku synopsis, which is always entertaining. So Chakotay starts with a narration or the voiceover log at the top, which I think is the first time in our series that it's not a Janeway captain's log. I don't recall any other episode yet having anyone else start the log under the opening scene.
There are, though. There will be.
There will be, but yes. I think this is the first time.
Yeah, this is the first time it's not Janeway. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So that jumped out to me, the very first narration, the voiceover there.
That jumped out to me too, but what jumped out to me was, what exactly is that star date? 5567777.4.
Who knows? It's all made up.
I never got that, but maybe.
Speaking of made up, Akuchimoya is made up, right? Akuchimoya is like a Germanic or something. It's not even native language, but.
I never asked Jerry Taylor about that. I think she might have found something
that was Native American.
Yeah, maybe there was something.
I Googled and tried to do some research right after we watched Akuchimoya to find out like where it came from, and all I could find was Germanic based. I mean, even in the Star Trek blogs, people are like, we can't figure it out. Like, wow. There's parts of it that might be other native languages combined together. Mm. That was one interpretation. Yeah. Is it sort of like Aku is one tribe and Chi means this and Moya means that. So yeah, maybe it was a combo platter. But I thought it was interesting. I also Googled Chakotay's medicine bundle that he opens up. It has a blackbird's wing in it. It has a Shamuzi stone, which is a river stone. And it has an Akuna, which is a modern device used instead of psychotropic herbs to facilitate the vision quest and maintain the meditative state. So I thought it was an old tricorder or something when you opened up the medicine bundle. No. But it was something called, that's why I Googled it. I was like, what is that thing?
Yeah.
It's an Akuna. Which
we talked about that
mouth,
a little bit.
You put it up to your mouth and you go,
and
you are tripping, baby.
We talked about this in his interview. We talked a little bit about this.
The Akuna? We did. That's right.
Yeah. We joked about it. Like I said, like, I was like, Beltran, why are you holding out on us? Why haven't you given us a toke of this? You know, like, so we were joking about
the Akuna.
This. Yeah. The Akuna simulates the high.
Well, that's funny because. I assumed it was a tricorder.
That's what it looked like, an old tricorder or something. But it was the Akuna was a modern technological device used instead of psychotropic herbs. So I thought that was interesting. I was just curious what, you know, if I could find out what was in that bundle. By the way, you have the bundle, your shuttle gets destroyed, and then you have it again at the end. So how did you get that back? I went like because you had the medicine, like, unless you stuck it in your pants.
You didn't know that Chakotay always kept that bundle up his ass the entire time. He just pulls it out whenever he needs it.
Well, you know what I thought also, not a smart thing to put the shuttle on autopilot while you do a ritual.
Yeah,
you know, because somebody has to drive that thing.
Yeah,
there's no telling what you're going to run into or. I just thought that was not a smart thing for him to do.
He is clearly a good pilot because he did the loop-de-loop. Around and took out Aaron Eisenberg's.
That's new for a shuttle to do that. And that's, you know, am I right? I've never seen that.
I don't think we had seen a move like that yet. No.
No. It was, and you know, what was funny? Top Gun to me.
What was funny was that, you know, on the panel, they have that circle on the panel. And I actually went like this to do the loop. I went, and it made the sound.
Really?
Sound department made that. And then you saw.
Oh, that's funny.
Did you push it upwards? Is that what you ended up doing?
I think I did. I think I went.
Did a little circle? Yeah. I used to do that down in the front seat. I would slide things around depending on, you know, what we were supposed to be doing.
Well, when I noticed,
just,
when I
just
noticed
to break it to the audience, by the way, none of the buttons were anything. It was literally a panel with painted on things from the backside. There was not a button or anything that moved.
And also, guys, it usually was not our hands. It was usually second unit.
A lot of times
else's hands would be there, and they would bring in, did that happen to you guys too, where they would bring in three or four background people that had hands similar to yours and said like, okay, which one looks like your hand? And they picked somebody else that had a similar looking set of hands. So,
yeah, I hated that because I could always tell when it wasn't my hands. I was, that's not my hand.
By the way, Robert, I thought your shakes were very good. You know, Kim Friedman gave us that videotape of Next Gen actors shaking. So that
DS9.
DS9.
Thank you, Kim Friedman.
Yes.
Thank you.
You studied it well. When you took the shakes in the shuttle there, I was like, wow, that's some good shakes.
We learned more about the Kazon, right? I mean, that these different sects.
Different sects. And I think Carr said, Aaron said at one point, he said, well, our sects change every day.
Every day.
Yesterday we had 18 or something.
That's right.
That was brand new. And they also brought up in this episode the Trabe for the first time, I think. We'll meet them later on. We'll find out about the Trabe later on. But this, he talks about the Trabe for the first time in this episode.
Yeah, also, if you go back to in Janeway's ready room, Neelix is there. And Neelix and Janeway both talk about Lieutenant Ayala and his separation from his children, his boys. Lieutenant Ayala, as we all know, is our good friend, background actor, Mr. Tarek Ergin. Yes. I found him on Instagram. So I'm going to message him, Robbie, and I'm going to bring him. We're going to bring his butt on this show. We need to talk to Tarek. He was there all 7 years.
Yes, you know, he was.
Standing next to us in the mess hall with us, in the cargo bay with us. I mean, we talk about his character all the time. He's referred to. He needs to have a little bit of love. You know, we need to show him a little love.
I noticed two things with the Neelix and Janeway scene. One is I remembered that Ethan had said to me at some point over the years, he said, you know, I always played Neelix like he had a crush on the captain.
Really?
And I noticed that in the scene. He was sort of giddy around her. He was sort of,
wow.
It was very funny. And I don't know why that came to mind, but I was like, oh, I see what he's talking about. He said, I always wanted to play Neelix. Like he just sort of was infatuated, just had a crush on her. So I saw that. And the next thing I saw was when they came out of the ready room onto the bridge, I noticed that as the doors opened and Kate came through, she was smiling like as if someone had made a joke, and behind her was Ethan coming out with a big smile on his face looking down. So he must have, just as they called action and the doors open as they come out on the bridge, I'm sure Ethan did something to try to make her laugh because he did that all the time.
I didn't know that he played, that he had a crush on her the entire 7 years, that's how he approached that with Janeway. Because I should have did that with you. I should have just played like I had a crush on Tom Paris the entire time. No, sir, I was not. My crush was always on Chakotay. It was never on Paris. Okay.
That makes sense.
I was impressed with Patrick Kilpatrick's performance. I thought he brought a real, you know, the two Kazon that I always remember was the guy that Seska ended up with. You know, he was some
Maj Kula. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought he did a great job with that role. Mm-hmm. And I thought Patrick did a great job with this role.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to add to that, Robert. Patrick did such a good job that the other guy, the secondary, the B story Kazon, really came off like a California surfer to me. Like it just like, I didn't, yeah, he's got the prosthetics, he's got the wardrobe on, but because Patrick was so committed to his Kazon, the other guy seemed trivial, you know, in comparison. It was sort of, I'm waiting for him to go, hey dudes, I'm going to go catch a wave now. I'm ready to go surfing. You know, he didn't seem like the second in command, you know. It was Haliz, I think was his name, you know?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So that kind of bothered me. Do you guys remember that the makeup guys were always joking about Patrick Kilpatrick? Because one of, I can't remember if it was Scott from makeup or Mark Sjostrom, I can't remember who it was, but they went to they went to the bathroom, and it happened that Patrick Kilpatrick was also in the bathroom in one of the stalls. And I guess he was having a little hard time getting stuff come out, but and then he was making all these he was making all these noises, like he was sitting there going like, "Oh, key's on," like that. And so that became the running joke, is that they would say, "Patrick Kilpatrick, key's on," and just imitate that they were constipated. And then this became, I mean, we would joke about this.
We did, we talked about that story quite a bit. I no one else was there to witness it, so
just the makeup guys,
even if they made it up, I don't care, it's hilarious. We had a Kazon who was, you know, who was shouting Kazon as he was his morning.
Number two. There was that, he was doing number duty.
There was that moment where he gives the kiss of death to Aaron.
Yes, Hunt. Yes.
That was not written. That he added that. He did that.
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah, that was really kind of like, that shocked me. I'm like, wow, was that in the script? And no, he actually ad-libbed that. That's amazing.
Good friend of mine, Steve Caffrey. Do you know Stephen Caffrey, Robert? I don't know if you've ever worked
with Stephen. Not by name.
Steve was one of the leads of a series called Tour of Duty. It was a series on CBS in the 80s, late 80s, early 90s. Tour of Duty was about the Vietnam War. And Steve was one of the leads, my friend. And Patrick Kilpatrick was a regular on that show. So when Patrick was coming on to do our show, Steve called me and said, "Oh, my buddy Patrick's going to come do your show." And he said, "Yeah, he's an awesome actor." He goes, "He's really intense, though. Right? He's a method actor." So I'm not surprised that Patrick, from what Steve, you know, the way Steve described him, I'm not surprised he added a kiss of death or some...
Yeah,
you know, something a little extra there. He sounded, you know, from my friend's description, he sounded like he was always a pretty intense actor.
Thanks for adding that info, Robbie, because now that makes sense. The whole bathroom scene, he was still method acting. He was in character even while using the bathroom.
Yes.
He's on.
Yeah. I would always, when I was in the bathroom, you know, Tom Paris.
No. This is how you go to the bathroom when you're constipated. You're like, "Yes, ma'am," is what you do. So.
Okay, enough about the bathroom.
I just want to say, if Patrick Kilpatrick is listening to this, I'm so sorry if we've embarrassed you. I don't want to offend.
I don't even know if that's a true story, but it's a good one for us.
It's a good one for us to have.
Just like you can tell the story about me saying "yes, ma'am" as I go, if you want. That's a good story. You can take it if you want.
Yes, ma'am.
I was just going to say that I think the connection of Chakotay's ritual at the top.
Yeah.
And kind of bookending the whole episode, you know, the prayer to his father and his ancestors and all of that, combined with this story of kind of a male initiation for Carr, I thought was beautiful. It was just a wonderful counterpoint. And personally, I think that, you know, we have lost a lot of these initiation rites, particularly for men, that there is value in some of these things and talking about what it is to be a man. And, you know, I think Carr learned so much from Chakotay that his culture didn't provide, that the Kazon did not provide. They just said, "Go kill somebody and you're a man."
Yeah.
And Chakotay was able to offer this other insight and wisdom, and still without shaming Carr or anything, was able to say, you know, you can be who you are and be a man, and it can be more than you even imagine. I just thought that was a great story.
I agree. I think Ken Biller did a great job. There's only one line that I, even when I was doing it, I was like, "Oh man," I think I even asked Rick if we could change it. And it was that line, "I'm a gentle man from a gentle people," you know. I just hated it.
You pulled it off. That's funny that you hate it, because I thought you pulled it off. Like, it didn't bump for me at all. Didn't feel cheesy to me at all.
It did to me. And because I don't think people should say that about themselves.
Yeah, you know, I get what you mean.
I'm a gentle person. You know, it's almost as bad when somebody says, you know, "I'm an intellectual."
Right. Right.
I don't know. At the time, it bothered me.
Yeah, it's funny. I hear what you're saying now. I hadn't thought of it that way, but I felt like you pulled it off, because you were really trying to, in my impression of it was, you were trying to impart a lesson of, I have, my values are to be respectful of people. My values are to be gentle and not combative, not, you know, to avoid conflict. That's what I got from that line.
Yeah, yeah. I figured that that's why it was there. I just, at the time, it did not sit well with me.
Yeah.
Well, it didn't rub me the wrong way either. And but I can see how you felt, Robert, that it was your "aren't I clever" moment. And Robbie, this is an inside joke between Robert and I. So
and Rick Colby was like, when I said, "Can we cut this?" He was, "What? What are you talking about? No, no, it's a bit. No. Let's continue.
Let's continue." Yeah, when he didn't want to engage the conversation. No, it's fine. Let's continue.
I want to talk a little bit about the Kazon themselves. I honestly, not until this episode have I never really realized how similar the Kazon foreheads are to Klingon foreheads.
Very similar.
But just the foreheads, as you start going down, the rest of their face look like Skeletor from Masters of the Universe. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, thanks for the shout out, buddy.
I had to shout that out there.
Yeah, thank you.
So I noticed that thing. But overall, I would have to say that Kazon are my least favorite species in terms of like enemy species.
Agreed.
In all of Star Trek.
Agreed.
Because they're not believable to me in that they look so primitive, but yet they have such modern, you know, they have just these starships themselves. And it seems like these guys are pretty much, I don't even think they would even have warp technology. You know what I'm saying? It was sort of like, look at the way they're dressed, how they deal with it, their environment, how they talk. It just, to me, it seems like they're a pre-warp society, that they shouldn't even have ships. So that kind of bothers me a little bit. You know,
I also think their ships literally look like Klingon warbirds or something. Like the ships look like Klingons to me.
A little bit more like Romulan, I think, than Klingon.
Maybe
you're right.
Romulan.
I mean,
But the colors, the lighting felt very Klingon. The whole culture of like battling and killing and death feels very Klingon.
Yeah.
They feel derivative and not nearly as interesting as a Klingon. So.
I do feel that part of it is, guys, I really feel like that, you know, like I said, when they were developing Voyager, they were finishing TNG, they were filming the movie, that they had so little time to put into the development of this Kazon race. And the Kazon were the first bad guys that we see in Caretaker, right?
Yeah.
And what really, really detracts from them is the damn hair. That hair is the worst. I mean, it's just like, what is this crap that they've got going right there? If they got the hair right, then maybe they'd be believable, you know? I'm sorry. Robert, any comments on Kazon anatomy?
No, I think you're right. You know, we used to talk about this back when we were doing the show.
Yeah, we did.
I remember us laughing about the scene in the pilot where they wanted the water. And they, water.
Water.
There's water. They have water. So, yes.
We have starships, but no water. Yeah.
You have a starship, go look for it. It's
yeah. You know, you can make water with, two parts hydrogen, one part oxygen. That's all you really need. Yeah. It's not that hard to make water.
Two elements. Two elements.
Put them together.
So I thought the same thing. You know, it just wasn't quite thought all the way through.
Yeah.
Yep. An unfinished alien.
Do the Kazon have any physical attributes that are particularly, like, here's what I'm getting at. When you took Patrick Kilpatrick hostage in that scene, you know, you grabbed the gun, you grabbed him. I feel like the way that these aliens are designed, they're so combative and everything's about, you know, fighting and killing, that I was just surprised how quickly he gave up and that there were 10 other people in the room. Like, this is a physical, you know, UFC culture, and I just didn't buy it. I didn't buy that I also felt like they seem like strong people. Like, even Aaron was sort of punk.
Yeah.
Like, he had guns as a kid, you know? I mean, he looked strong, and as an alien, I would think that they might be a little extra strong, stronger than a human. But we didn't really play it that way.
You would think that when I grabbed him, someone would have thought, okay, this is my chance to make a name for myself. I'm going to get this guy,
you know,
devil may care kind of attitude that they have, you know, to get your name, no matter what.
Yeah.
You know?
So, yeah. Kill somebody. It's like, that's a heroic thing. I felt like the hostage situation was staged, and Rick Colby's directing I love, but that was one moment I felt like they should have come up with another, like a couple of phaser blasts to back them off or get them away or something. Yeah. I felt like that, I didn't buy that. And I also didn't buy later on in the planet when Janeway and the away team get trapped in a force field. You know, they walk into a trap or whatever. It was not very well explained. And they just sort of froze and looked around. And I was like, wouldn't they bang on the side or try to do something? There was a couple of moments like that. I thought the staging, I was like, I wish they had created a little more action moment.
No, I agree. Especially with the disarming and capturing of Patrick Kilpatrick's character.
Razik.
Because in real life, Patrick was so strong. This guy.
Oh, yeah. He was
strong. I was holding him and he was holding me with this vice grip. I was in pain. He was holding me so hard.
Wow.
So he was really strong.
Those are the downfalls of working with a method actor. They take it out on you. You get beaten up by those guys practically, you know? But as much as the blocking didn't work, it could have been staged a little bit better of your takeover of Razik's character. Same thing with Aaron's character of Carr. When he takes over the second in command, Haliz, what does he do? He kicks him in the leg and just grabs his phaser from him. It's like, wait a minute, you could have blocked that a little bit more effectively where it would be more believable. It was just too easy to disarm him at that point, I felt.
Did he do one of these?
Yeah, the double-handed, No. And so when you were talking about Robbie, like you were wondering if the Kazon anatomy was a little bit different because of their warrior, you know, nature. My immediate joke was like, oh, their penises are shaped like daggers, actually. They use them. They use those as weapons. Oh, yeah. When they lose their phaser, they can use their penis. So there is no real talk.
And they're wooden. They're made of wood.
They're made of there's no real talk of any difference in their anatomy, really. And also, what's interesting is we never see, or at least I haven't seen, I don't recall seeing, a Kazon female. Because in the Klingon race...
There was one.
Was there one?
Yes, really? Either the view screen. When you talked in the shuttle, Robert, I think when you talked in the shuttle to the ship that was pulling you in or something, and it was a woman that came up. Yeah.
Really?
Okay. I'm pretty sure because I remember noticing that and going, oh, that's interesting.
Okay, because I haven't seen that. I
don't remember that at all.
Yeah,
that it was only a woman.
Only men, and that would differ from the Klingons because the Klingons include the women are also in command as well as being foot soldiers, you know. Mm-hmm. They fight just as well as the males. So I was really surprised to hear just now that you saw I'm going to have to rewatch that.
Yeah, check out. I think it's in the shuttle when the ship comes up and they tractor in the shuttle.
Yeah.
Because you've got Carr in the back and he's like, no, kill me. Don't let them, take me in or I'll be ashamed or whatever. So he wants you to kill him. I think it's whoever you talk to there, somewhere around that part.
Yeah. When you beam down the moon, was that Vasquez Rocks?
Oh, Robert? Yeah.
Absolutely. And it was hot.
I was going to say.
It looked hot.
There were, how many episodes did we do? Did we shoot at Vasquez Rock? Something like 4 or 5?
At least.
If this was the second episode of the season, we usually started filming in June.
Yeah.
June or July at the latest. So this would have been June, July, or August at the very latest. So it would have been summer. Hot and those poor Kazon out there in the heat with all that stuff on.
It was killer.
Okay, so Robert, your line when you're first in the rocks, you say to him, because for some reason that escapes me at the moment, I keep saving your life. Now, if you want to hate me for that, fine, but I'd really appreciate it if you kept it to yourself. And then he speaks for a little bit and you're like, to yourself! And the only thing I could go in my mind was, from the story you told earlier about Aaron, that the line should have been, because for some reason that escapes me at the moment, I keep hearing you sing that song. Now, if you want to hate me for that, fine, but I'd really appreciate it if you kept it to yourself. La, 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 to yourself! Like that. That's what I just...
That's funny.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, Aaron. Vasquez Rocks. Yeah, Vasquez Rocks is iconic. It goes back to the original series, right? They shot some out at Vasquez Rocks in the original Star Trek.
Yeah.
I think Kirk was out there a bunch, right?
Fighting the Gorn.
Right? Yes, the Gorn, of course.
That was out in the rocks. And it's so funny because it's just as hot then as it was, as it is now. Like yes, you can see that sun. You don't even have to feel the heat. You can look at that scene and go, that's hot. That's
yeah.
hot,
oh, yeah.
hot, hot day. I mean, it's nothing. No liquid. fans always comment on how many shuttles that we lose on Voyager. And I think, is this the first shuttle that we've lost in this episode, Robbie? Would you guess? Have we lost one in a prior episode?
I'm sure we've lost one okay. before. This is I the first just, one that like is specifically I can yeah. remember, but yeah, I can't imagine. We go through shuttles.
I want to keep a running tally of the number of shuttles we ruin. It's yeah. just going to be all really right. funny to know this. So I'm going
to, that would be fun to find out how many actually.
Oh yeah.
We're destroyed.
Yep.
You're right, Robert, too, when you said this episode, when we cut back to the ship, basically everybody's just going, well, where is he? I don't know. Well, can we find him? I don't know. How can we find him? Let's try. Like the scene in the briefing room.
Yeah.
Briefing room, which, by the way, I did not have a single line in.
I wrote that down.
Paris has zero line.
You have zero lines in that briefing room. That's a first. Usually everybody says one thing. Like, you know, Paris nothing. Will throw in something. But oh my God.
I got that's nothing just, except at the end she says, Neelix, you stay with Paris on the bridge.
She refers to you, but you still don't say anything.
I don't say
you
said anything.
No.
I made a lot of good faces. You know what? They need me because I was there to look pretty. Okay.
Okay. So, but you know, but you actually redeem yourself because you are in command
yeah,
in this
I am.
Episode. I don't remember you doing that at all.
I don't remember that either. But I did when I was watching the episode and the shot opens with Neelix going over and sitting in the captain's chair and I paused it and I made a note. I was like, oh, great. So Neelix gets to sit in the captain's chair. I've never sat in the captain's chair. And then a second later, I pop up. I'm in command now. So it was okay. It worked out.
Yeah, but you let him sit there. You should have sat there. I don't know why you didn't sit there. That makes no sense.
I don't know. By the way, in the briefing room, Neelix has a line where he says something like, I think you call them booby traps.
Yeah. And he's sort of
like, he enjoyed saying that line just a little too much. Yes, Captain, I think you call them booby traps.
But you know what I found interesting was when you speak to the Klingon guy when you're on the bridge and Neelix comes up and not the Klingon guy, the Kazon guy.
Kazon guy. Yeah, see it? It's very similar.
And compared to him, when he's on the view screen and you, it looks like you just finished shaving. No, it looks like you just jumped out of the shower, put on your deodorant and moisturize your face and put on your outfit and came to the bridge ready to work, you know, and this Kazon is like, they look like what they really want. You know, I was wishing that Patrick Kilpatrick would say something like, we want your soap. Because they just look like they're filthy.
Yes, yes.
I'm glad you brought that scene up, Robert. I actually wrote out a part of that scene, and I'm going to do it right now for you guys. I'm going to do Robbie Duncan McNeil as Tom Paris and Patrick Kilpatrick as Kazon.
All right, bring it.
And this is sort of like a teaser because for our captain and our admiral tier patrons, they get to hear my impersonation of certain scenes. So I'm going to do a little quickie right here.
Okay.
So right on the view screen, you see the Kazon and you see Tom Paris standing up. I'm Lieutenant Tom Paris of the Starship Voyager. Jar Razik, first Maj of the Kazon Ogla. I will speak to your captain. I'm in command right now, so you can speak to me. You are trespassing in Ogla space. Why do you orbit our moon? Just stop to make a few repairs. We'll be on our way in no time. That is a lie. You are here looking for your Commander Chakotay. Now, how would you know about that? Quite simply, we killed him.
Ta-da! Nice. Very nice. He did say, Patrick pronounced Chakotay.
Yeah, well, he said it really quickly. Looking for your Commander Chakotay. Yeah.
He gave it a little extra zhuzh.
Yeah.
He zhuzhed it. After he says quite simply, "We killed him," you now see a covered shot on B'Elanna sitting there on that side station. Did anyone notice she has a really very a 60s bouffant hairdo or something? Yes! It's like, what was that?
What it was the like, heck? It was like, woo. It was like out of the musical Hairspray. It was crazy.
It was Annette Funicello from, some type of, I was waiting for her to do some crazy 60s dance move.
Yeah, it was a very different hairstyle than I've ever seen on her. Yeah.
Yes.
So both also, Tom Paris and B'Elanna just came from the spa and the salon, Robert.
But you know, that B story was so thin, wasn't it? I mean, it was just like.
Oh, yeah. There was nothing there.
Yeah, for sure.
Boy, Neelix took a big chance on the bridge when he was like, he jumped in.
A little out of line, though. I don't know. I mean, you could have shut him up. You did try to shut him up, but you didn't
I didn't know what he was doing. I didn't know where he was going with this. Mm-hmm. And then, eventually you realize why he's so cocky, but that's a big gamble.
It was a gamble.
Big gamble.
He could have got everybody killed with that.
Yeah.
But he, did you guys notice the one extra on the stage there in the teal colored, medical
did not.
Starfleet uniform. I think her name was Jordan, older lady, maybe. But I remember specifically from this episode, if you see her, she's extremely tan. And I remember talking to her and she was like, "Oh, I just got back from Mexico." And I thought, "Oh, you're really, really tan right now." And that's going to be kind of jarring, compared to everybody else. Cause we never talk about going to a tanning salon on Voyager and getting super dark, but she was really dark.
Maybe she was Mexican.
Was it? She came Jordan back from Gonzalez? Mexico
because she was Mexican.
Yeah, no. She was definitely gringa. She was not
at the beach. You can't do that. You can't go get your hair cut on your own on a TV show, and you can't go get a suntan.
No.
You shouldn't because you shoot things out of order. You never know if, one week you have a tan, one week you don't, if things aren't going to match. So
that's true.
But it's always fun to me, for me, when I see those old episodes, is to, I always remember the different extras that worked with us,
Yeah, yeah.
Because I made friends with so many of them. They were fun, to hang out with.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the one that used to do her knitting all the time. And oh, that's the one that was always reading a book. And
It's true, though. They became like our extended family, really. We talk to those guys just as much as we talk to each other. Because let's face it, we're cool. I mean, there are other series regulars on shows that really don't give extras the time of day, but we did. So I think we are more human, I think, or at least
egalitarian.
Yeah, egalitarian. That's a good way to put it. That scene on the bridge where Paris, you're standing next to me. We figured out how to, we can now break through and talk. They have transmissions with them. Did you guys notice I have blush, like major blush, like on my cheeks? I look so rosy cheeked that
maybe you just came back from Mexico.
Maybe.
Probably more like Arizona.
It's so funny, things that I will catch of my character that you guys won't even notice. And there's things like Robert will catch on his character, like the lines where he had to say, like, "I'm, my people," whatever, that he didn't like, that he notices that we don't notice. So we always are much more critical of our characters, I think.
Well, that scene that Aaron and I did in the caves.
I love that scene. Well, a couple of scenes in there, but yeah.
Yeah. I thought that even though that kind of smacked of like Indian, we don't believe in owning land. We believe in Earth, stars, owned by everybody, everyone owned. But I kind of liked it.
I did too. I made a note of that line. I actually liked, I thought that line was, it was bringing in a very real Native American belief, because that is true.
No one owns land. I wrote that down. No one owns land.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wrote it down too, because I thought it was a great piece of Native American culture to bring into this story with Carr, who is all about this tribal factions and this is our land and you can't be here. This is our territory and territory. It all became, they were willing to kill anyone, everyone for territory. And so I thought it was a perfect way to bring in.
I liked it too. And that was it. Kind of the differing philosophies, was pretty much what Chakotay was trying to teach him. It was like, okay, you guys believe in killing people and getting your wings or your badge by killing someone in war. And we have evolved over the centuries to the point where we see that as completely irrelevant, unnecessary, a lower quality of thinking, you know, of philosophy.
Yeah.
We also learned from an expositional line that an outcast in Kazon is called a Govin, someone who is an outcast, and that if he was to go to another sect, that they would, each one of them would cut one of his fingers off. I was like, wow, that's pretty hardcore.
Yeah. Yeah. I made a note of that as well. The Govin. Yeah. We definitely learned a lot about Kazon culture and, and again, they brought up the Trabe in this episode. So that's going to lead to kind of the Kazon's relationship when they were enslaved by the Trabe later on. And
I did have this kind of errant thought though, when he said, whichever Kazon sect I go to, they'll cut off one of my digits. And I asked him, well, how many are there? And I was, if he had said three, and I would have said something like, so you still have seven fingers. What's the problem? You'll still have seven.
But since there's 18, all 10 will be cut off plus eight toes, maybe? Yeah, that's the deal there.
You still have your two big toes.
You can walk with just two big toes, Bar. It's fine. Did anyone notice when the away team lands on the planet with Janeway that Kes, when they see the Kazon, Kes draws her phaser and aims it at the sky. She doesn't even point it out towards the...
Oh, she did? I didn't know that.
She pulls it out and she aims it straight up. And I thought, ooh, because this is the first time Kes has been part of an away team, you know? Because she's sort
clearly
of like just hanging out.
Clearly it's the first time. She doesn't know where to point a phaser.
She doesn't know where to point a phaser. No one even instructed her probably on how to use the phaser. It would have been funny if she pulled it out and ended up shooting Janeway by mistake. That would have been more of the comedic take on that one. But I noticed that.
I thought the away team, I think I mentioned this earlier, when they're, well, two things, when they run into the Kazon, they very quickly believe the Kazon. Why would they trust the Kazon?
Yeah.
Like, oh, let us lead you. We don't want you to get hurt. Oh, okay. We'll put our weapons away. And just,
it was
like,
it was
are
so
you an
quick.
Idiot?
It was so quick.
And then they walk into the trap. They walk into that force field trap or whatever, and they just stop and they just sort of stand there like, oh well, I guess we're caught in this force field trap. There's a couple of like I call BS moments. That was
okay.
One that was
all right.
Come on. But
I have to agree with that. I have to agree.
And usually I would say Rick Colby usually shoots those kind of moments really, really well. I felt like directorially, with all due respect, I think he dropped the ball. It just didn't work, you know.
Did he phone it in? He phoned it in on this one.
But he didn't in other scenes, like in the cave, when you're there in the cave and Aaron is you're asleep and he's struggling with killing you or not, and he comes over and he grabs the tricorder and he, like the way that Rick shot that was beautiful. It was really dynamic and just kept moving the camera movement and the way that Aaron grew into the close-up, and it was all beautifully staged and shot. So Rick did some things really well, but those two little action sequences I thought were just like, oh.
I'll play devil's advocate for Rick Colby here. I think that scene where they just go behind the force field and just stand there that you're so upset about, I think that Colby was like, you know what, guys? It's so hot out here. Let's just hurry up and finish this. Get home. You know, I mean, I think let's just do one shot,
one wide shot, and we're done.
One wide shot, and we are finished here. Everyone,
just stand
just
there. Don't do anything.
Don't do anything.
Don't take
it's
too long.
Too damn
you're
hot
trapped.
Here.
Oh well. Yeah.
Well, I had one note about the famous Dennis Matalone shot to the chest, and
yes,
you know that. The Dennis Matalone stunt, you know, where his legs kick up all the time. And every time that he's hit or shot with a phaser, he kicks up his legs and he falls flat back on it.
That's signature Matalone, right?
Yeah,
that's the way he plays it. That's the way we actually talked about Matalone the other day.
We did.
Bobby was talking about how Dennis kept up with Cosmo Genovese, and when Cosmo was in the last days of his life, that Dennis visited him at the home, old folks.
All the time in the motion picture home.
And what I didn't bring up, because I kept wondering, why does he do it? And I thought, you know what? This is Italian-American solidarity.
Oh, yeah.
Padalone, right? And then Cosmo Genovese. So these are two Italian-Americans remaining close. So
nice.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think Picardo should have been there too, right?
Yeah.
Picardo.
I had never heard of a code white.
Yes.
That was the first time I've heard of a code white.
Yes, but you looked very shocked by it, though. You played it very well, Robbie. You were like, it's code white? Oh, my God.
Yeah. The last thing I'll say is I thought the prayer to your ancestors at the end was beautiful. I always love when Star Trek can bring in sort of that human, the mystery of being human and spirituality in some way in our sci-fi, science, technology world and kind of blend them together. And I thought that was great. I loved the way that it ended.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, just to give give props to Ken Biller, he wrote several Chakotay-driven episodes that I really liked.
Oh, great. Ken's a great writer. He's very talented.
Yeah.
And he really came of age as a writer. We talked about this in some earlier episodes, but Ken started as a story editor. He was just the entry-level job of writer on our show season one, and he ended up the showrunner by season seven.
I'm gonna call him Ken Biller, champion of all Maquis characters, because he wrote Faces, which was B'Elanna's big thing, right? Mm-hmm. She's Maquis originally. And then he wrote Chakotay's story here, which is Maquis character. So it looks like he favored the Maquis, at least so far.
Yeah, that's awesome. A recap. And Robert, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Always great to see you guys and to be part of it. Thank you for inviting me.
Thanks for coming in and tribute to Aaron and his memory. And so it's really been great to have you here to share your memories.
I think it's great that this episode is going to be around for people to see his work. It's different than what he did on Deep Space Nine. And it shows a level of talent that he had, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
Agreed. Thank you guys for listening into our discussion of Initiations with our special guest, Mr. Robert Beltran. And tune in next week when Robbie McNew and I will discuss and analyze the episode Projections. And for those of you who are our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus content. Thanks, guys. Robbie, who's your winner for this episode?
My winner is Carr and Aaron Eisenberg's performance. I think he was able to, because of what in our story, what he experienced with Chakotay, he was able to learn something he never could have learned with the Kazon. And so I think he's a big winner there. And I think Aaron's performance was just wonderful. And so all around, Carr/Aaron Eisenberg, winner for me.
Okay. Mr. Yeah. Beltran, our special guest, who would you say is the winner of this episode?
The winner? Well, you know, I've never played this game before, but now that I've been thrust into it, I would agree. I think Aaron brought his character, gave it so much life, so much believability, and just actor to actor, I admired what he did with the role.
Yeah.
Okay.
Agreed.
My winner is going to be Chakotay's medicine bundle. How on earth did that thing get to the final scene? Was it in an anal cavity? I don't know. I mean, it could be. How did that happen? I mean, I think that is the true winner for me.
That is the true winner. the medicine bundle.
Complete destruction of the shuttle to appear miraculously at the end.
Well, there's a blackbird wing in there, you know, so it can fly wherever it wants to.
Okay, so it was an anal cavity. It was not an anal cavity. We know that.
I assure you it wasn't.
Good. It wasn't there. Who's the loser? Who is the loser, Robbie McNeil?
The loser is... I would say the loser is Patrick Kilpatrick, and his character was...
Razik, thank you.
I just blanked out. Razik is going to be my loser here, mostly because he's dead.
Okay.
So...
Okay.
But he also was kind of a jerk, so he deserved it.
Robert Beltran, do you agree with this or do you have a different answer?
Well, I was, normally I would know immediately a Rick Colby directed episode. This didn't seem like a Rick Colby. That's why I asked you guys at the beginning. Yeah. Is that I asked if it was another director. I just felt he was just a little off his game.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I love that.
Because he's a very strong director, and there was a couple of not the whole episode, because I think the episode was very strong.
No, not honestly, the whole episode. Yeah.
But I think there was some moments that, and that's the danger, is you can't let your guard down for a minute, because if the magic and the story falls apart even for a minute, it's hard to get the audience back. So.
He sets a high bar for himself, and I thought some of those crucial scenes, he kind of let it fall apart, and right. That was not usual for him
yeah.
at all.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that, Robert, because we have never really chosen a director as a loser until this time. So this is good. My loser is going to be the shuttle. That poor shuttle. That poor shuttle. So that's my loser.
That was the loser for sure.
But it
didn't take the medicine bundle with it, because medicine bundle was the winner.
So going off of Robert Beltran's choice for loser, I'm going to ask you, Robbie, this is another thing we talk about in this bonus segment. We've already touched upon it, but directing style, if you want to just elaborate.
Directing style, yeah. I would say Rick Colby sets a high bar. I agree with Robert. And I thought there was some beautiful moments that Rick composed, shots that were very, very pretty shots to look at. They amplified the story in good ways and added value to the story and the drama. So I think generally, you know, Rick's style is often, he'll have these long shots that sort of, he tends to shoot longer lenses so that he plays the focus, you know, he'll be coming across and then find something in the foreground and rack focus to this detail in the foreground. And then that will turn into something else. He's got a way of sort of letting shots evolve. And he did that very much in this episode. And the times that Rick didn't follow his own playbook, you know, like the wide shot of them stuck in a trap, felt, you know, that's a place where I think those tighter shots or telling the story with multiple shots would have been helpful. And
I think that in the episode, The Fight, that he directed, which was a Chakotay-driven episode, thought he was just brilliant in that one. But really, I mean, except for those two moments, maybe two or three moments, I just thought maybe he had a bad day, you know, maybe he was having problems with the wife or something. Mm-hmm. And that stuff can creep into your work sometimes, you know. Definitely. But
mm-hmm. Yeah, Rick was very good with the actors too. I mean, he
kept it light.
Yeah, he kept it light, and he used very simple language to sort of inspire you or just give you like the idea that he was trying to convey. He didn't overtalk things. It was usually very direct and simple and very actable. So I think he was a good director for this episode.
My do-over would have been right in the very beginning when Janeway comes onto the bridge and she asks, like, have we contacted Commander Chakotay? Mm-hmm. Have we reached out to him, whatever, made him, sent a message to him? And I say, all frequencies, no response. And just the way I delivered that line was so tired. It was like, all frequencies, no response. It was like really kind of dead. So if I had to do this one over, my do-over is going to be just giving a little more pep to that response, because Chakotay is an important character, you know, to Kim. That's the commander, and there should be a little bit more invested in that one. So that's my do-over.
That's your do-over. My do-over would be, I think that bridge scene where Paris was in command, so to speak, for that short bridge scene. But but I think that I chose to play it very cool with the, you know, to try to not provoke the Kazon or play it really cool. And I think it was, I would have thrown it away even more. I think I could have made it more casual and just a little more grounded. It felt a little presentational to me. I would have done that over. I did notice, like, in one of the close-ups of me there, I was sort of sweating on my forehead. And I was like, oh, I wonder if I was like nervous, or, you know, I often would get nervous as an actor, to be honest with you. I would, you know, trying to remember lines or just, unlike Aaron Eisenberg, who just relished being an actor. I was very conflicted as an actor. I had moments of loving it and had other moments where I was just like, oh, I didn't, you know, I felt uncomfortable. I didn't like cameras pointed at me. I didn't like to be in that position. So I felt that that was coming through on that bridge scene. So I would say a do-over for me on that.
Yeah. Hmm. Interesting. I didn't see any sweat. I saw no sweat off for that. Oh, so interesting. Okay. Señor Beltran, anything for you?
Well, there's the scene where Aaron first gets beamed onto the shuttle.
Yep.
I remember not being satisfied with it at the time. A lot of those scenes.
You mean the blocking or line delivery, or what was it?
Yeah, the delivery, the way I performed that sequence in the shuttle after he was beamed in. The one line that kind of sticks out is, "You're welcome. You're welcome." Or I don't know.
Yeah. No, I know. But yeah. I wonder if because I was in the shuttle a lot, as we all were. But it was often very uncomfortable to shoot in those shuttles because they only had one door at the back, and the crew would come in and there's lights and you kind of have to climb in. And, you know, it could get claustrophobic for me. I would often feel like, you know, physically, like I had a lot of limitations. And so I don't know if that added to, you know, whatever, however you felt about the scene, that maybe you just couldn't.
Especially if it was the first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. So true.
Yeah.
Horror. The horror.
Can you clarify, Robert, exactly in terms of redoing that scene in the shuttle, did you feel like how would you have changed your delivery of the "you're welcome"? Would it have been more throwaway, more intense? Like, what did you not like about it, and how would you have changed it?
Well, I think that there would be more things to myself rather than outward, you know, just to internalize instead of to him.
Robbie is wearing the Delta Flyers cap once again. This is a San Francisco Giants baseball cap, but it is a Star Wars version of it. As you can see, so I wore this in honor of Robert Beltran, because he fooled me for so many years saying that he never watched Star Wars, and then finally told me that he watched it but fell asleep in the first minute and a half, as we know from the interview that we did with Mr. Mm-hmm. Beltran. So I wore my San Francisco Giants. You can see the Death Star over here.
Yeah,
you know, my Star
Wars.
That's
amazing. Yeah. Nice. That's amazing.
Yeah, man. So this shirt that I'm wearing, it's very funny. A fan actually made this for me. So it's the Star Trek chevron, and it says, "You just met me, and it was awesome." And then here in parentheses on this side, it says, "You're welcome," right there. So "you just met me and it was awesome and you're welcome." So
nice.
Kind of a cute little shirt.
That's that a fun shirt.
I was gifted from a fan to thank me for how nice I was to treating the fans. So you don't have anything specific clothing wise that we're looking, that we need to know about, Robert, but I do want to know about, what is that figurine that is right behind you? A little figurine on the other side of you. Yes. What is that? I've been looking at that this entire time. My focus, what is it?
My daughter made that.
Oh, wow. Oh.
It's a crafts. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Is it of someone specific, a character, or just a random? It almost looked like a Kazon person with the clothing.
You're right. I don't know if it was a specific person. It could be from something they were doing in school, because they were learning about Native Americans. So it might be that.
Uh-huh. Makes sense.
It's very well done.
Yes, it is.
It looks good, and it's more two-dimensional than I thought. I thought it was very three-dimensional from where it was where it was placed, but it's more 2D.
John R. says, "The dumbest alien species ever. The only saving grace for this episode was the performances of Aaron Eisenberg and Robert Beltran. I am over the Klingon ripoffs." Okay. Tells it like it is. He doesn't hold back, John. We have another one here from Kate. She says, "This episode did a great job of revealing the gentle, spiritual character of Chakotay." I agree. He's a gentle person. He's a gentle man from a gentle people.
I'm a gentle.
Okay, and the last one is from Benji. Benji says, it was wonderful to see Aaron Eisenberg out of the hard Ferengi makeup. He is absolutely stellar in this role. I agree, Benji.
Absolutely.
Aaron did a great job. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Robert, I do a little bit of a language lesson because I'm a bit of a linguophile. So I've been each episode giving one little phrase or word, and this week we'll stay with Russian, and it's going to be the term for I like and I don't like, which is also important to know. So if you say I to refer to yourself in Russian, it's mne. It's like mnye, mne. And then you say like is nravitsa. Okay, so if you say you like something, it's mne nravitsa. If you don't like it, you put ni in front. So mne ni nravitsa. So that's how you negate it. So in a sentence, if I say I don't like Moscow, city of Moscow, because it is too big, I'm going to say mne ni nravitsa Moskva. Потому что это слишком большое. So I just said, потому что is because, это слишком большое means because it's too big.
Wow, that's a lot of
Robbie,
Russian.
Robbie, can you do it?
No, I can't. That was too many words.
Yes, you can.
Мне, мне.
Мне нравится.
Мне нравится.
Нравится, that means you like it, okay? And then не нравится is you don't like it.
Не нравится.
That is the lesson. That is the lesson, language lesson for this week.
Мне. Мне не нравится.
Well, great. Robert, thank you again for taking the time to spend with us and rewatch.
I love it, you guys. And so you have to invite me back when we do the one that you directed, Robbie, Unity.
Unity, yes. Yeah.
That was your first directorial.
That was my second one.
Second. Sacred Ground.
Sacred Ground was my first.
Robert, I don't want to ask you, what is your favorite Chakotay episode for you, in your estimation, through the 7 years? Because we definitely would like to have you back on whatever episode you believe to be the, you know, preeminent Chakotay episode.
Unforgettable with Virginia Madsen.
Okay.
But I also liked The Fight. That was fun to do.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Perfect.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to make a note of that for sure.
Yes,
and
we will.
Unity. Mm-hmm. And Unity I enjoyed very much.
Unity too. Was great. Yeah. Ivar Broger was in that, one of his first
That's right.
jobs.
That's right. Terrific.
Yeah, he was terrific. Terrific. Great cast.
Yeah.
Well, thanks again, Robert.
Okay. Thank you, guys. Good to see you.
We love you. And once again, thank you all the Patreon patrons who are listening into this bonus content. Stay tuned next week when we review Projections. All right, guys. Thank you. Live long and prosper.
See ya.